Christmas Eve, Saturday, December the 24th, was a morning of little note. I rode around with Lyndon and listened to fence building talk with J.W. Early and the Meyer boy. We bought the Dance Boys' property, right adjoining the Dance Girls, all of whom I expect are in their 50s. I spent an hour or so of decorating and arranging things at the Cedar House, talking to the Filipinos about how I like things to look, placing ashtrays and wastebaskets in the right rooms, and seeing that there are coat hangers and extra blankets and extra pillows in the closet. I slide through life too much without getting that done. Lyndon and I went with Dale Malachek and Dale Meeks to drive through the Martin and Dance and discuss the feed we were giving the deer. And then I returned to the ranch house, stopped by the communications trailer to invite all of the switchboard girls, our men, to come in and have eggnog and cookies with us after dark. And then into the Secret Service house, which used to be the Mexican house right behind ours and has just been done over, and is now, for the first time, a comfortable place for them to stay, and a picture window where they can keep watch over our comings and goings. After lunch, Lyndon and I left in the Jet Star with only Jake and Dr. Berkeley from the Secret Service to go to Kelly Air Force Base on a poignant mission for Christmas Eve to greet wounded GIs who were returning to Texas. We landed and met the Henry Gonzalez. Spoke very quietly to a small group who were lined up behind the ropes waiting at the base. Lyndon did not intend to make a speech. And then the plane came in, an ambulance plane. Lyndon went aboard and met the men and then came down, solemn. We stood at the foot of the steps, he and I and Linda. She had joined us. She'd spent the night before with Roy Lynn to go to her party, a happily looked-for event, which that dearest of girls had given for Lucy and Pat and another young couple who were about to be married. And then they began to file down the steps, 20 evacuees, including two children of servicemen stationed in the Far East, with bandaged arms or legs and silent, stunned faces. Suddenly, as the first one approached the bottom of the steps, the small crowd burst into spontaneous applause. There was utter stillness. Never had it felt so close, the strange war. And then, suddenly behind me, there was a happy sound. There he is. There's my boy. And a pretty lady brushed past us with a, "Please excuse me, Mr. President." And a litter case came down the steps, and a young man raised his head and grinned. His mother kissed him, and then she turned to us and said, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, but this is my boy. We just heard last night that he'd been hit." How incredible. All those thousands of miles away, and then suddenly, this afternoon, he is home. His private first class, Alex Hudson III. His father seemed stunned, but his mother only happy. They loaded him to a big ambulance in a sort of a hammock, and his mother sat holding his hand. The last of the 20 came down, and silently they went their ways, and the clapping died, and the three of us boarded the Jet Star. I felt buffeted by emotions, deep respect for those young men, and for an organization that could get them all the way from Vietnam back here to San Antonio within hours of being wounded, and a shattering sympathy for anybody that's got any yes and no's to say about this war. McNamara, Westmoreland, Lyndon. We were back at the ranch by 4:30, and it was Christmas Eve. Tony and Martiana had arrived. I had so looked forward to their coming. It's nice to have family, and to like family, not merely love them. Having had only two brothers, I'm in a position to appreciate large families and to be grateful for what I have. Lyndon and I and Lucy and Pat and Tony and Martiana drove around the Martin and the Dance. We stopped in Leela's house, where she has her brother and sister-in-law spending Christmas with her, and had a drink. Talked family and old times in an atmosphere in which I'm sure not one person present thought of my husband as the President of the United States. And then, back in the car, we decided to go and see the quail, a Christmas gift from the John Hills, 140, I believe, which, because of the biting cold and hoping that they could get used to their new home, we had put in what used to be the turkey pen. We put some food and water in for them, but the cold was piercing, and Lyndon said, "If we don't get them some kind of cover, they're going to freeze tonight." He'd asked Dale a little earlier if he couldn't find an old doghouse or a big box of some kind. A little later, I heard Dale on the talking machine saying, "Jewel, Go out and open those boys' Christmas presents. I need those boxes. Anything into the breach? Later, I found out his sons had each gotten a small desk for Christmas. Just a fine home for the quail. When we arrived at the turkey pen, night had fallen. But the car lights revealed that some of those quail had gotten out of that pen. So Lyndon and Pat and Tony and the Secret Service got out and began to patiently try to shoo them in, one holding the gate and the others cautiously walking behind and shushing the quail back into the pen. While Lucy and Matiana and I collapsed in laughter. Lyndon did not give up, and he and Pat worked at it until the last one was safely back in. What an hilarious way to spend Christmas Eve. Back at the house, the fire was going, and it was past 7, and pretty soon the telephone operators, whom I'd invited early in the day, came over. And there was a great bowl of eggnog and lots of cookies on the sideboard in the dining room. The house was beautifully decorated. All Helen's doings. Balsam rope along the mantelpieces, in the big living room in the den, and wound around the stair rail, and mistletoe hanging from the light fixtures, and holly from the White House, and a great brass bowl on the dining room table, and Christmas carols going. Lyndon invited in the Secret Service and the military personnel, and the Waco men. We all filled our cups with eggnog several times, or a drink, and I showed them the red velvet nose on the deer, which has been there each year since 1952, and the red satin Christmas stockings with our names on them, hanging from the mantel, which Neva had given us. We can't quite remember when, but we think it was when Lucy was 2 or 3 years old. And the lovely angel from Germany, brought by Helga Kropp's husband. Tony and Matiana were good help, listening with real interest with all the people who work around us. And it was a nice hour. Sometime or other, Linda had disappeared and had flown to Dallas to meet George. And it was a late dinner when they returned, and we sat down at the table. Lennon and I and the two Taylors and the two Nugents and Linda and George and Jake and Marie. How good Marie is to have returned. She'd been to see her folks for only about 24 hours and by her own insistence had come back to help. After dinner, we went in the office and had the onslaught on the Christmas tree. Mary and James and their 3 children and Gertrude and Lee joined us, and it was an hour of pandemonium with squeals of delight, especially from Lucy when she discovered some tiny diamond earrings which Pat had given her. I had an album of wedding pictures from Lucy with an incomparable inscription from her. She has a gift of expression that will serve her well in life. And a folder of Daumier lithographs from Linda with an hilarious one about the budget. A fat woman being wrestled into a corset. This is the French budget in 1869. A watch from Lyndon, and something I particularly enjoyed. A jug of wine from my neighbors, the Bergs, and a copy of Dickens' Christmas Carol from someone on the staff. Close to 12, the floor was a shambles, and everybody had their presents, though not all of mine were open until 2 days later. We realized if we're going to make midnight mass, we had to hurry. So I changed quickly from a hostess gown into a dress, and in the station wagon with Lyndon driving, Lucy and Pat and Linda and George, Marie and Jake and Matiana and I went to St. Francis Xavier at Stonewall. Tony bid us good night. There were only about 2 cameramen outside. We were really a surprise to them. And the small, poor church was full of familiar faces. And the nicest thing about it was I think it made Lucy a little happier that we were with her. By 1 o'clock, we were back home, and I went to bed, giving myself the luxury of reading before I went to sleep.